Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. We focused very much on the Lewis Hamilton-Max Verstappen fight on Sunday. It felt a bit uncomfortable at the time, but listening back, I think it was justified, and we've had really great feedback from that show, and we've even had people who claim to be Red Bull and Verstappen fans, I think more relieved that there was more balance than they perhaps expected from that show and that lineup. I hope you guys enjoyed it, but I did want to get back on the mic and address some of the midfield stuff. We've got a few non-race topics to talk about as well, and then maybe we'll have a little bit of a look ahead to that finale in Abu Dhabi. We are, of course, joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going fine. You know, my favorite part of the show is when you tell me what's on the show and then I look at what I've actually put in the notes and go, where's the rest of it coming from?
All right. Yeah. So my job is to just declare things. You sort it out as we go through the show. But some positive Missed Apex news that I want to address. You, in fact, pointed this out to me that we are scoring very highly in the charts at the moment. So in the UK iTunes charts, we are the 34th ranked sports podcast, which is just incredible. And if you look around at the company, we are up and around all these very highly polished, well-funded shows. And I think I just wanted to say to you, Matt, well done.
And you too. Extremely well done.
I am very proud of what we've done. But I have to say, we could not have done it alone. We couldn't have done it without all our great panel and the support of the patrons. If the money alone wasn't enough, the belief that our patrons have had in us has been outstanding. So I want to credit being in the top 34 of the iTunes charts to them, Matt. As good as you've been, I want to give them most of the credit.
And as well they should, because without them, neither of us would be here. But I, much like our drivers and constructors argument, I can't believe you're leaving out the fact, first of all, we're top 100 in US, Canada, Australia, and Great Britain. But we were number 159 in all podcasts in Great Britain.
Yes, the episode, the review itself was the 158th ranking podcast.
Giant.
It certainly
is.
Sorry,
I'm not even introduced yet, but that is giant.
We may as well introduce you. It's Christian Pedersen from the media world of Denmark Land. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Mr. Spanners and Matt, and congratulations. Well, you did the right thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, it doesn't like change. It's an arbitrary number in some ways, but what it shows is that, you know, people have been sharing the show, people have been tuning in. And to those people who are newish, I just want to say welcome to Missed Apex. We have a variety of voices on the show. We have people from Denmark Land all the way up there in the cold. And we even go across the channel to the Netherlands. And we have Jules Segers. How's it going, Jules?
Hi, Spanners. Going well. I'm coming to you, speaking of national charts for podcasts, coming to you from a country where one of the leading F1 podcasts boycotted the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix and didn't record a show.
I completely can have some sympathy with that. Even if you look at the mainstream broadcasters, you will see there are certain prominent broadcast people that, for example, won't cover the Russian Grand Prix. And I know the Chinese Grand Prix as well was very difficult for certain people. So I absolutely respect that stand. We don't boycott any particular race.
Just a small point on that, cancel a podcast on behalf of going to Saudi Arabia thing. If you look at the race this weekend, not only did I get to meet a female Saudi Arabian driver, I got to see the fire in the eyes of the marshals, and I got to see a lot of things I didn't really expect to see. So when Formula One goes to Saudi Arabia, it activates a lot of things we don't talk about. I'm totally against everything that happens in that sort of way, but it does bring good things. It does bring positivity, and that is what sports should do. Now, does the board meeting at Mercedes think about this? Or that is a totally different story. Just don't forget the positives. That's all I'm saying.
I think Christian makes the absolutely correct point that it's always more complicated than people on the internet would like to have you believe.
And this is it. Yeah. It's not that I don't have an opinion or opinions. It's that I'm not in the place where I can give it the proper nuance and depth that it would deserve.
Yeah. And I would say that were there positives? Yes. Are there, from our point of view, significant issues? Well, yes, obviously also.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, there was a race. We could talk about that.
Big Dirty News.
So let's talk about some of the action in the midfield from Sunday's race. And we didn't quite finish saying it, but I also wanted to say a thank you for everyone who's shared a link to Missed Apex podcast, missedapex.net. Share that on your Twitter, tag us, even if you've only got 5 people. It really does. It helps our visibility. And I don't think we'd have been able to spread the word without you guys sharing it. So thank you very much for that. Matt, I think the safety car is a great place to start because, you know, the focus was on Verstappen getting the free lead, but there was loads of cars up and down the grid that won and lost.
Yeah. And this is the thing if you were in the midfield, well, I mean, even at the front, it was a thing. The teams made a bet when that safety car came out. Some teams bet on it just being a safety car, and some teams decided they would get their free pit stop and take advantage of it while they could, because looking at the crash, you're thinking this is going to go long enough that I'm into the hard tires to the end. And yeah, then some teams said, heck with that, track position is going to be king here in Saudi Arabia. So we stay out and we gain the positions and we sort the rest of it out later. And everything, where you wound up, whether you won or lost, flowed from that singular decision.
Do you have like a list of who pitted, who went for it? Do we know?
Well, you know me. No, I have no idea. Of course, yes, I have a list right here in front of me. So the people who made the decision to pit, aside from the 2 Mercedes, and I think this is interesting because I think the people who pitted were covering the Mercedes. In the midfield, it was Norris, who I believe was in 4th place at this time. Or no, Leclerc, 4th, Norris in 5th, Stroll, Latifi, Alonso, and Russell. Now, Stroll and Russell were in a beautiful place because they were just about at the pit entrance when the safety car got called. So they actually got away scot-free. They got their pit stop in, and they got back out without losing a place. And then they gained when everybody else came in. And the people who definitely stayed out, and this made for split strategies, Ricardo, Sainz, and Vettel all had started on the hard tire. So it would have been a pointless stop for them because they would have had to go onto the medium, which wouldn't go far enough at that point.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you think of the tactics there, Jules, from the teams? Because there seemed to be this kind of insinuation, well, you know, it's likely for it to be a red flag. And I suppose there is precedent in this current regime of it being safety car, oh, and then red flag. It feels like it's a bit too much for the strategists. You've got to preempt what the marshals are going to decide or what the race control is going to decide. That takes a bit of the sporting edge away from it for me.
I think so. I think as a strategist to think of all these possible scenarios, it's undoable, I think. And it made me think of this track and tracks like these. Liberty seems to want to go to inner cities and have street circuits like these. But if you want tracks like this, I think this weekend showed that, you know, these tracks play into hand, that every single piece of debris can mean a virtual safety car or a safety car or a red flag. And last weekend showed the race was interfered with so much that I think people need to rethink if this is what we want.
Like whether safety, well, you know, I'm not a fan of street circuits, Matt. so I think street circuits inevitably do lead to this kind of stop start action, especially where safety correctly is paramount. My real question, I think, here, Christian, is the approach to whether that needed to be a red flag.
Well, the big thing is you bought this flat screen TV for Christmas, and then on January 1st, it's half price. That's basically what happened here. So you were given an opportunity to buy something, but then suddenly it rewards everyone else. And that is what happened with the first red flag. I remember a time when the pit entry was closed when you had a red flag. And that basically destroyed everything, because once you get a red flag, then balls are thrown into the air and people have to make new decisions on the go. And that is what makes Formula One exciting, I think, when people have to not rely on what they already know from the beginning of the race. When they're put in a situation where they have to make split decisions, then things change. So I'm not really sure you can do anything about
I've got a solution.
What happened there.
No, you're wrong. I've got a solution, I think. Matt,
give it to us.
And then I'll say my thing, and then Matt will say why I'm wrong. If there was a red flag that finished the race on lap 54, and there was a big crash, like in Brazil when they had the countback and Fisichella ended up being declared winner instead of Raikkonen, they count back to like where was the last sort of sane point before all of this kicked off. So why not have a safety car plus? So someone's gone into the barrier and you go, okay, it's safety car plus. That means that we are saving the marker point at this point where the safety car plus goes out. And if this then turns into a red flag, we will revert back to that point. If it's not a red flag, we'll carry on and your tactical decisions then count. Matt, come on, Matt, for once. Give me some props. Come on, that's good.
So I like the idea, because the red flag is supposed to freeze the action. Now, interestingly, if you want to make the argument, like, for example, when I saw the accident, and I think I said it in the Slack chat at the time, like, that's a barrier repair. Like, you see how hard he went in. And I think that's why the people who pitted is because they knew it would be enough laps under the safety car. But if you watch the F2 races, every single barrier repair was a red flag. So you could also argue the information was there to make the correct decision from. You just had to decide, was it going to be a repair or not? I like the idea. The problem you have with that, if you want to talk about maintaining tactical decisions, though, and ignore what I just said, is that there is already a rule under the red flag that you can put new tires on, that you can fix damage and stuff like that. So if you're going to revert, and some people pitted and some people didn't, you're giving the people who didn't pit still a chance to catch up. So you'd also have to deal with that other rule as well. And in fact, many people were rather furious because in addition to Verstappen, it gave several people a chance to fulfill the tire requirement without needing any pit stop at all.
So I've had races where the safety car and someone pitting was to the advantage of what I wanted to happen, and I have the reverse as well. And when it's not going in your direction, it's just the worst.
It's heartbreaking.
It basically, it's a bit like a dog running onto a field in a Champions League final during the penalty shootout. It's a bit like that because it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, how about expanding the virtual safety car a bit and maybe go for the virtual, maybe have a virtual 2, which goes a bit slower, but you still keep your position on track. It makes a pit stop available and viable, maybe, but you're still on track and you're keeping the pace, maybe slowing down for the area affected, et cetera, et cetera.
Sorry, I just realized that we should nickname the safety car period Snakes and Ladders. Or Chutes and Ladders, is that what you call it over there?
Nope, Snakes and Ladders.
There you go.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, all right. Well, where do you want to go first, Matt, for our kind of winners and losers of the safety car?
Well, I think let's save the winners because that's a positive topic. Let's talk about the person who lost out the most.
Yep.
Because for all that it was wretched for Norris personally, He went all the way down to P14 or P15. He went down to P14, and I think he wound up even maybe in P15 at some point after the first restart, because he got pinned, I believe, by traffic in his pit box.
Oh.
And that was the end of his race. He managed to come back and score a single point. But the good news is it had the exact opposite benefit, I think, for Ricardo, in that he was able to, he didn't pit because he was on the hard tires. So he got a completely free pit stop and was one of a couple of people who actually then managed to go all the way to the end on the medium tire, believe it or not, and wound up in fifth place. So McLaren, after scoring, what, 3 points, 4 points over three or four races, actually finally managed to do decently. And I think that had to be a positive result.
Why have McLaren been doing so poorly of late?
I think it's budget. I think it's a 2022 car. I think you're seeing that. And then also really Ferrari with their new development, the ERS development, has upped their game. So their competitors have moved on and they've not had the resource to keep up.
I just wanted to emphasize that Matt is spot on. It's definitely a Ferrari gain. Ferrari is, I've said this, I think, maybe the last three times, Ferrari is onto something. Like, there's a vibe there. The only thing not going for them is a potential fight between the drivers next year. But I think the Ferrari machinery factory is working really well these days. And that affects McLaren a lot. Also, they are having some financial problems, and there's a lot of talk about a new buyer and stuff like
Audi,
that.
Audi, yeah.
I'm not saying that affects everything, especially the racing team, but it does do something, though.
Yeah, I think maybe McLaren doing bad is a bit the picture isn't as bad as it looks because of Ferrari, but I think we should all also not underestimate. They probably had a bit more resources going into the preseason, fitting in a new PU with Merck coming in, and they were the only team having to do that. So I think Matt is right. Probably development stalled a bit earlier, and I think they still did a pretty decent job, probably coming in fourth in the constructors, and you know, with a new power unit,
as well. Okay, so I just wanted zone in on the two drivers just for a little while, because it has been a season of two halves for McLaren. There's been a lot of glory for McLaren, and in most of that kind of glory, good form time, Norris had the upper hand. And since they've been kind of leveling off a bit, actually Ricciardo has looked not mega strong or anything, but it's looked like there's not too much to pick between the two drivers, less so perhaps. And I'm wondering if Ricciardo is just getting a bit of a raw deal, kind of pundit-wise. You know, obviously there was the win in Monaco, but even then most people were saying, oh, but Norris could have gone past him if they were allowed to race or whatever. The team said, no, this is the best result for the team. This is how it's landed. I don't know. What do you think? Well, let's go. Christian, fair shake of the stick. If Ricciardo next season, what do we think?
I think we've seen a lot of drivers break their neck on cars they didn't expect to be as hard to drive as they turned out to be. And this, the McLaren has to do with something that is generic and vital for Ricciardo's driving style, which he's had to reinvent or develop in a new way. But if you look at it, I find it funny that when Norris is doing, except Monza, of course, Norris is doing really good, Ricciardo is not really. And when it's the other way around, the other one's not doing as well. So you rarely see the two McLarens up there together, side by side, like you do with the Ferraris.
So it could be, Matt, that we have an inherently difficult car at McLaren and one of them can pull a good performance. You know, when everything goes right, statistically, we're only going to get one of them kind of pop up and look good. It's a good observation from Christian.
Yeah, and actually, it puts me really in mind of Mercedes as well, because we have heard from sources and from technical reporters that the car is very tricky to set up so that the driver can get that extra bit they need to be really competitive out of it. So if Mercedes struggles to get both Bottas and Hamilton a car that is competitive with their driving styles, it would seem that McLaren has faced the same issue with Ricciardo, and that's been doubled down because he had, I would assume, a very different driving style to what the car required and to what and to how Norris was driving it. So it was also a big learning curve for the engineers at McLaren to figure out how to give Ricciardo what he needed in the car.
Okay, so here's the bit where we get emails. Okay, right. Here's my hot take. Okay, so Norris, very good, obviously. Real talent. Probably, and this is what I got yelled at for on Checkered Flag podcast. But I think probably just that consistency where it's the top draw performance week in, week out that Verstappen and, say, Hamilton have been showing. Put Norris in a Red Bull or Mercedes right now for this championship, I don't think they've got that same consistency yet. I think you might see something more of what Vettel delivered at Ferrari, perhaps, you know, where it was flashes of brilliance, great pace, and then and not quite delivering. I'm going to get some hate from that. I hope that Norris turns into what we see Hamilton, because he's got the most potential of perhaps anyone on the grid, arguably. But I refuse to believe that Daniel Ricciardo, not quite looking as brilliant at Norris in his first season at McLaren, is something to write Ricciardo off for. Did extremely well against Ocon. Did extremely well toe-to-toe against Verstappen in what increasingly is obviously Verstappen's team. And made Vettel look a bit silly in 2014 as well. And looked great in the Toro Rosso. I just don't understand how people have written him off quite so quickly just because of the last 6 months or the first 6 months of the season, Matt.
It's all down to Carlos Sainz. I'm just going to say it.
Everything is about Carlos Sainz with you. True. You're obsessed.
It's so true, Matt.
Stop sucking up to Matt.
I'm agreeing with you, Matt, all the time in everything. I love it when we agree.
He showed up at McLaren and was right there with Norris. Then he goes to Ferrari. He's right there with Leclerc. Ricciardo comes to McLaren. Now, again, it could just be a trick of the driving styles, but Ricciardo struggled in a way that Sainz didn't. And so that did drop his stock, I believe, in the eyes of the commentary. Does that make him any less dangerous as a driver or any less talented? No. Could he win a world championship if he was in the right car? Yeah, absolutely. I do believe that. But in the absolute comparisons, right now, if you're a team hopper, Carlos Sainz is the person you have to do as well or better than in order to impress anybody.
And this is what team hopper, I mean, there's another term for that, is journeyman, isn't it? The journeyman driver, the journeyman footballer, moving around team to team without kind of settling and claiming that ownership on a team. And actually, you've named two drivers, probably include Ocon in that as well, who are talented enough, Perez, talented enough to be picked up by teams, but have not made that kind of stake in the ground in a team and made it theirs.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I only gave a mild snort of amusement because you snuck Perez in there even though we're talking about the midfield.
Well, I know, but okay. So,
But you're right. He does belong in that category.
And it's not the first time either.
Which is fair. I sneak Ocon in all the time. I was desperately holding back.
Look, Perez was on his way out of Formula One. He was the ultimate journeyman midfielder, Jules. Back me up. Come on.
I didn't want to back you up on Perez. I wanted to back Matt up again.
Oh, all of you.
So it's three against one.
This is my favorite panel now.
Yeah. No, but about the team hopping. I think the question is, Ricciardo isn't the 2014 guy anymore. It's 2021 now. He's 30 plus years old. I think the question could also be, is he mentally still up for giving it his all, or mentally up for the fight against a teammate like Norris? I think we shouldn't forget he had a high at Red Bull. He left Red Bull while he didn't really want to. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah,
then the Renault years were a disaster. They didn't challenge him. They put him in a position where he didn't want to be, wasn't used to be. He wasn't fighting for victories. So mentally, that does something to you. And then you come into McLaren as a big celebrated name, but you actually struggle. I can imagine that mentally he's maybe not gonna be able to bring all that to the table.
So he has to get himself out of that Renault mindset where he took the 40 million a year. Was it 40 million a year, that contract?
Yeah, but that also adds to what you mentioned just now, Spanners, about why do people write him off so quickly? I think it didn't do him any favors going for that big bucks deal and then not really doing anything, it doesn't look good on you if it turns out like that.
Well, we can compare Ricciardo's decision to the drivers that didn't take that leap. We can compare it to Bottas, who has basically stuck with it because he says, well, I'd rather be in the best car and give it a shot. Mark Webber stuck with it at Red Bull with Vettel, when at times that was humiliating and you could see the anger, but he was like, no. I mean, Webber could have gone and got a big deal, a midfield team. They would have snapped him up.
Yeah, I agree completely. And just sitting here, I had the very interesting thought. We all believed to a certain point Ricciardo left Red Bull because he felt like Max was going to get preferential treatment. And he didn't like that, even though, as you point out, Webber put up with it. He went to Renault because he got lots of money and because it was a manufacturer. But I do begin, and he left like right when that experiment began to bear some fruit, because even under Abitbol, they, in that third year, were starting to become more competitive. But I do wonder if ultimately McLaren was able to snatch him away, and this puts me back in mind of the Carter days, if they already knew that Mercedes engine was coming in this season, and he wanted that power unit more than anything else. And maybe that's why he left when he did, because nobody but Renault right now wants a Renault power unit.
Christian.
I mean, everyone knew from mid-season 14 that the Mercedes was going to win a lot of championships. So looking from a career point of view, I would say signing with Renault, being headhunted, signing a big fat check, being with them for a short amount of time, it's so essential for how you work with people, integrating yourself into a new team. You arrive at a factory, there's 1,000 people all expecting you, that one person, to get into that one thing they built and win. And you're not going to do that with Renault, but you made a lot of money. You learned a lot. I mean, working with Cyril Abitbol, I think you learn a lot about how personalities engage with each other in the paddock. And then again, being headhunted to McLaren. He's probably not getting the same bonus check or paycheck in general, but it's a nice gig. The one thing I've noticed about Ricciardo is I've seen a lot of that kind of phase, that what was this race kind of phase in the last 2-3 months. And I've never seen that before. So
maybe
that's
Jules,
the only thing I'm thinking about.
So you're backing up Jules's point that, you know, is that motivation there?
There's something there, but also you need to remember that McLaren was so far behind the form they should be in. So where they are right now, gaining and in the constructors and stuff like that, that is where they should be. They should be number three or number two, at least, I'd say.
Mm. Matt?
Yeah, well, traditionally, if you've been watching just long enough, like I have, you think of McLaren as fighting with Ferrari and Red Bull to win championships, not to be best of the rest way down the field. And they sort of got there by fiat because of the engine penalty against Ferrari. Ferrari, Fiat, Agnelli's, but yeah, okay, fine. Never mind. They got there because Ferrari was so weak that third position was open for plucking. And they, much like, I guess, Braun, they just came on strong with the Mercedes engine at the start of the year. But once Ferrari got their full money going, once they got the ERS upgrade going, there was never really going to be a defense they could lay to that third spot in the constructors. And I love that Jules pointed out about having to spend all their tokens just shoehorning the power unit in. They weren't able to fix anything else like all of their competitors could with their tokens, because they took the new power unit. So they were always going to be losing out at some point, because there was going to be development they couldn't do on the car, because they changed nothing but what they needed to get the power unit in. So I think this is an inevitability, and I think it's been difficult for Ricciardo, but I am really interested to see what next year's cars bring, because that's going to be a much more level playing field for McLaren. And it will be, yeah, I honestly don't know. It's going to be a coin toss, but we could see easily 4 or 5 teams there or thereabouts fighting for the win.
So I'm going to use a cliche and say, if it looks like 4 rings, it sounds like 4 rings, and it smells like 4 rings, it's probably Audi. And the rumor, that rumor doesn't just surface from nowhere. There's something about that rumor. Of course there is. It could be Williams. It could be McLaren. McLaren makes a whole lot of sense from a broader perspective. But if Audi buys McLaren and sells McLaren, you can keep one driver. Which one would you pick? They're probably going to pick Lando. No offense, but they are probably are. He's the future for the team. Is that what you see in the eyes of the Mr. Daniel Ricciardo? I know this is just a stretch, but it would make sense.
So I'm the only one defending Ricciardo here. Like, I'm a little worried about you, though, Christian, because we had dogs on the pitch. We've had Black Friday TV deals. What was this one? If it smells like four rings. Like, are you all right there? Like, have you?
That's the Audi logo.
Yeah, I know that. I'm wondering, is everything okay there in Denmark?
Yeah, everything is perfect.
Have you had your mushrooms today?
Yeah, but our flat screen TVs are so cheap in January. You can talk about that another time.
Yeah, well, we've learned something about Denmark. I'm just worried that Christine is going to go berserker at some moment. I feel something boiling up to the surface. Should we move away from McLaren then? So we had kind of a winner and a loser with McLaren. Where do we want to go next?
Well, if Ferrari count?
Ferrari, yes. But that seems like a natural kind of evolution, to be honest. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do Ferrari.
And I do want to bring this up because they have a very intriguing teammate battle going on that also includes Norris.
It was spicy.
It's 159 for Leclerc. It's 158 for Leclerc, 149.5 for Sainz. And in between it, 154 is Norris in the Drivers' Championship. So we could see three places going different directions depending upon how they finish. At the end of Abu Dhabi. So there's something to keep your eye on. But what I love about this race and what I love about what the safety car did, because it was, you know, snakes and ladders, it wound up putting Sainz and Leclerc next to each other with Leclerc on hard tires and Sainz on medium tires. And there was some, I hate to say fireworks, but it was a bit spicy, wasn't it?
Who caught out of our panel here? Who caught any of that? That battle between Leclerc and Sainz. Christian, that to me seemed like Leclerc going, no, I'm not doing it.
And it was. And I mean, if Leclerc has been, highlighted as the driver genius of the century several times. Yeah. And this is the first season he has a new teammate and the guy is literally on par. And that is not what you would expect if you were Leclerc, I would say.
No.
And I would say he's pressured.
There's a few reasons that could be, because looking at the season and the other drivers who've got a new car this year, you would expect Sainz to be struggling. Leclerc was beating Vettel comfortably, but you feel like there was something going on back there. And as much as I like Vettel now and think he's a really, really good bloke, I always felt like he was overrated at Red Bull. I always felt like he had much more of a car advantage than was perhaps clear. And I think he was shown up kind of immediately by Ricardo. Matt at MissedApex.net to complain about this, by the way. And then went to Ferrari and had a chance to fight Hamilton and could not bring it with that consistency. And then as soon as Leclerc came in, instantly looked beatable. From Leclerc, and I think that led a lot of people to go, well, Leclerc is the next in the line. He's the next Schumacher, Alonso, Vettel. He's the next in the line for succession. And then Sainz has come in, and actually you'd expect him to struggle, but like Christian says, they look level. So something's going on here. Is it that Sainz is just a genius? And Matt would argue in that favour. Is it that Leclerc was favoured by preferential Ferrari treatment and beating an overrated four-time world champion, the ideal world champion that you would want to shoehorn into your team if you wanted your driver to look good? Where do you think, Matt? Where do you think we land on that Ferrari pairing? I mean, they shouldn't be so close this season.
They shouldn't be, but I think it's because Leclerc and Sainz are playing two different games. Now, I will hand it to Leclerc. I think if you're talking absolute raw pace, I think Leclerc can find a couple of extra hundredths a corner for you. But where Sainz is a dead-level genius is the long game, which is why we see him so often doing so well in the races. And I think Leclerc's current attitude is a little bit more, tiny bit more, marginally more win it or Bennett, if you don't mind me using that phrase.
Nope.
And I think that you were seeing the results of those different strategies. And I think that's why Sainz has done as well as he has, is he's always had a masterful control in the race of what he can get away with and what he can't.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, Spanos, I think it's both. It is Ferrari let Vettel down and vice versa, which painted a bit of an unnaturalistic picture of last season.
Yeah.
But it's also Sainz. I wouldn't call him a genius, but I think he answered the people who kept saying,
yep.
Yeah, but he's the guy at Toro Rosso who actually kept up with Max Verstappen. Was that true pace or was it? And I think this season he showed that it was true. And also he handed Ferrari a pretty big problem with that. Because everybody, when Sainz signed for Ferrari, was like, oh, that's the ideal number two to Leclerc, you know, the crown prince, like Christian just said. And I think no one at Ferrari was like, okay, we didn't see this coming.
Yeah. So what did they do? Because, I mean, they are a team, Jules, that tends to favor a driver. They like having their number one. So
exactly. If they came from a season with Leclerc and Vettel hitting each other, driving each other from the track in Brazil, for instance.
Yes.
And do you think they didn't want anymore was that they wanted to go back, obviously, to their tradition of a clear number two, you know, like Raikkonen was, not a lot of fuss, just do your thing.
Yeah, Barrichello,
they got
Massa.
Something else. Yeah.
That's what they wanted. That's what they want. And by the way, I do think that is the future for all top teams. I think the era of the Rosberg Hamiltons, I think that's gone. I think everyone will go down the number one, number two driver going forward. And we've certainly got it in the top three teams, haven't we? We've got people held off for ages accepting that Bottas was seen as the number two, but he certainly is. Perez is absolutely being employed as the number two driver. Traditionally, yeah, Ferrari would do the same. Sorry, Jules then, Matt.
Yeah, but that's the question. Do we have that next year in the top three? Because what is Russell going to do at Merck, right? I mean, sure, he comes in as a new kid, but then like Hamilton came in 2007, I mean, he obviously wanted to show what he was worth. And I'm definitely sure, like Russell did in Bahrain last year, that he's going to be on it from the start.
Yeah. Christian, before you get in, because you've got fantastic hair, so you might be able to chime in on this. Adrian Smith said, it's Tim Rudd says, Carlos has magnificent hair, but he has magnificent hair. He puts the helmet on and then he takes the helmet off and then he's still got magnificent hair. Like, I don't look like that when I come out of a go-kart. I don't even look like that after coming out of a VR headset. I look like a melted Malteser.
That family in general. I mean, I would love to go to their place in the countryside, drive some rally cars, hang out with the old one and the young one. It's a magnificent family. I think they have racing in their blood. I still watch his dad actually doing the Extreme E, and it's just, he's on fire.
Oh, wow.
He's older than me, and I'm around 120. In 70 years' time. I just wanted to add that in Mercedes, you see a clear number one driver. You see the same in Red Bull. And that you do because the drivers are just, there's a difference. In Ferrari, I don't see a number one driver. And I think Ferrari did a good thing by not saying anyone is number one and anyone is number two. They are driving for the spots, the same at McLaren. So yeah. I think the number one, number two driver system is a little bit dated.
I don't agree with that. I will just say that with the Russell thing, I think a lot of people are hoping that he's going to come in and show Lewis Hamilton up. I really don't think that is Mercedes' intent. The language when they signed him was continue to learn. And I think he will have come in. I think he will be coming in a succession plan. And that doesn't mean coming in and lopping off the king's head immediately, Matt.
I would agree. With the new cars, anything could happen. And I do believe at most teams now, and I think this is a big change from the Jean Todt era, which I think carried over under previous managements at Ferrari. I think Ferrari is, well, okay, there are worse problems to have. And as at Mercedes, as the season progresses, they will lean on the driver who best represents their chances. But they want a driver who can win if that's the driver that's in front. And they absolutely have that with this pairing. So I see that as nothing but good for Ferrari. And I see them coming to lines with the other teams, except for maybe Red Bull, where you could argue that Perez was definitely hired as a number two from the outset. So that's a bit more old school, if you ask me.
All right. But as for this particular race, how did we get to the point? Because I have to admit, this went completely under my radar with all the jumping up and down. How did we get to the point where we had Sainz right up behind Leclerc with what looked like a pace advantage?
I love you ask me that question. Yeah. First of all, Sainz passed a bunch of people from the start. Then he didn't pit, and Leclerc did, which left him P6. And then Perez completely smashed Leclerc on the restart, which put him back to P7. And was it 7 and 8? With 7 and 8, they finished.
Well, hang on, let's talk about the wording. Hang on. Let's talk about the wording. The Perez completely smashed Leclerc off of the track. Hang on a sec, 2 seconds. Got to find a button here. Whose fault is it? I don't know about this. Obviously, I'm a Perez fan, but it looked like Perez had absolutely nowhere to go, and there was a car on the outside of him. So the only person who could have avoided that accident, and Perez is slightly ahead, is Leclerc lifting off and getting out of that disappearing wedge. I'm not saying he has to do that. He's entitled to hold his ground, but I don't think Perez could have done much. Oh, Christian's shaking his head. It's everybody against Spanners today. Go on then.
Who's going to take this, Matt?
Christian,
do it. Okay, I'm going to take it. First of all, lab one of the restart, right? So are you going to give up a space where you're on the side of a car? Never. Do you have to leave room for the car on your inside when you're turning left? Definitely. So arguably, no, 100% Perez's fault.
Oh, Matt. Jules will stand up for me.
I'm afraid not. I actually rewatched this situation in preparation for this show. But I mean, Perez is taking over Leclerc, who is on his left side. And he knows, okay, this track is narrowing. There's no way he didn't know Leclerc would still be there. So I get that on his right side, there was still somewhere in AlphaTauri. But I think it was Gasly, but he should have known. Where was Leclerc going to go? If he would stamped on his brakes, probably someone would have hit him from the back.
All right.
It can happen.
Fine. Matt, you host now. I'm going to sulk for a bit.
Oh, sorry about that. But that is how they wind up fighting with each other for almost the entire rest of the race. Because as I mentioned, there was a tire differential there that gave Sainz an early advantage over Leclerc, especially on the starts. And so that's where all the kerfuffle came from between having to give the place back and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But it did make it fun for them. Although it did on the radio, it did sound a bit interesting. But I do believe that was Sainz just being like, give the place back before you get a penalty, because we still, we don't want a team penalty. That's not right.
That was so optimistic. So the situation, as I kind of see it, is Sainz has made the pass pretty much, and Leclerc has used going off track to keep it, and then not wanted to yield because there was stuff ahead of them. They were avoiding stuff too. So I think Leclerc might have gone, well, I was just making sure Carlos had enough space to not crash into people. But then Sainz's justification was just, you can see that in 4K. He could have just said, I think I made the overtake stick. Can he give it back to me? Using they're going to give us a team penalty, guys. No, they're not. That never happens with teammates. I've never once heard the race control go, no, swap back with teammates. And Sainz knows that. That was fun. I enjoyed it, though.
But did he eventually give the place back?
Good question. I think possibly he did, possibly he didn't. But there was another restart afterwards, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so threw everything up in the air.
Yeah, another thing that got lost in the rental car wars, as Brad described it up front. Where do we go next, Matt? Should we go to Alpine?
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm disappointed in this team in general. Actually, let's step back in general. I kind of not bought into the hype, but the rebranding came with a wave of optimism, a change of management, a two-time world champion coming back into the fray, and it's sort of not quite sparked. Or Jules, was I being always optimistic? Was I being over-optimistic to think that this could be the year that they would be a works team?
I don't think so, because I was too. See, I'm taking your back in this one.
Yeah, it's too late.
No,
I
was optimistic too. I mean, it's a great livery and you know, a beatable left the scene, etc. Alonso back. And I really expected them to be more, to do more than this season. And but someone whacked me in the head telling me that, no, but all the resources are going into 2022. So this is just
a warm-up
an off-season for them. I don't know if that's true.
Another
hope for them.
Another warm-up year, Matt. That's what Renault have been saying for years. Yeah, we've got a 5-year plan. No, a 7-year plan. No, it's we're not even Renault now.
Yeah, well, on the one hand, you would expect slightly better of them. On the other hand, they had a management change, and their plan all along was to aim at the new regulations, which keep getting moved back a year. And crucially, and this, I think, is the big difference between them and Ferrari for me, and the one thing that does puzzle me a bit, is Ferrari brought a massive upgrade to their power unit in anticipation of next year's rules. Renault's power unit is easily 2 years old. They're easily, the general calculations I've seen is they're 30 plus brake horsepower down on the best power unit in the field. And somehow they've managed to come fifth. They've won a race. They've had a podium, and they all but had a podium here.
Oh, yeah.
Were it not for the thing that really excited me most about this race, which is watching multi-lap Urs comparisons between two drivers fighting.
Jesus. Okay.
I was actually just going to repeat what Matt just said about the third place last week and the almost third place this week. And from two tracks being so aerodynamic dependent, If you're spot on with your aerodynamics, if your wind tunnel is correlated, you're in good shape. Mechanical grip you can always create. That is a totally different thing. So I think Alpine is doing quite well considering their old engine. Don't underestimate an old engine in this. Just look at Lewis Hamilton's new engine. The difference from an upgrade late in the season.
Jules, you're getting some props from our live stream pointing out how brutal your damning with faint praise was. How do you think Alpine have done? Great livery.
but even this, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, Christian, but those results, the win in Hungary, the podium in Qatar and the almost podium last weekend, they were all a bit of freak races, weren't they?
Sure.
Was that on merit?
Definitely.
Or was it, you know, getting dropped in your lap and take the opportunity?
See,
which,
Matt,
is a quality.
Matt, Jules is saying that Ocon's win was a fluke and he didn't deserve it. Unbelievable.
against an Aston Martin that was overusing its fuel while he was lifting and coasting. No, they absolutely deserved it. It was luck they were in first place, just like it was luck Ocon had a pole position, like, you know, because there were three pole positions in this race, apparently, and he managed to luck into one. But I was right. I heard him in an interview say, oh, yeah, at the start, I just aimed out of the way to let them by because I knew I couldn't stay in front of them. And I didn't want to get involved in any drama.
Okay, so tell us about that battle between Bottas and Ocon, and you think this was won and lost on the Urs deployment?
Absolutely, because how long did that battle last? It lasted 4 or 5 laps, and the Jeddah circuit had been talked about as not having the same kind of braking zones as, say, Monza. So it's going to, over multiple laps, point out minor differences in Urs efficiencies, the ability to recharge and efficiently use. Plus, in general, just how have I programmed my energy? Like, for example, Alpine consistently pulled away from Bottas in the first sector. Ocon did. As did Max against Hamilton. But in the second two sectors, Mercedes absolutely crushed them. But by the time you get to the third or the fourth lap, and you're recharging your battery a little less than your opponent each time, we actually saw Bottas have the pass done, but lock up going on to the last lap and giving Ocon a little bit of grace. But he had no battery left coming out of that final turn. And that's why the Mercedes was so able to easily overtake him, is because there just wasn't enough battery left for him to be competitive on straight line speed there.
So when I watch Formula One live, I usually do it on like 6, 7, 8 different screens.
Yes.
So I have a lot of onboards. Bottas, I picked up on him on the 5, 6 last lap of the race. And you can just tell how he learned a lot about corner 27 every time, how he took it in a new way, where he positioned his car. And he almost got it 3 laps from the race. And then the second last lap, he did what Matt was just talking about. And then the last corner before the line, it was perfect. You could actually tell when he went into the corner, this is going to happen. Maybe by a few meters, but this is going to happen. It was wonderful. It was beautiful.
And you saw, like, up front, actually, obviously the Verstappen-Hamilton race was overshadowed by the incidents, but you saw the different lines going into that final turn. The one, I think, that Hamilton ended up getting nearly the pass done and Verstappen going down the inside, he did that a very similar thing. It looked like he'd overshot the corner and came back to it very, very late. And actually, something that's been overlooked, I think, Christian, is that the track had some designs in mind to allow that. So some different lines through the final corner and then also turn 13 with the banking. I think we can take some positives from a track I didn't like, but let's take those things that did work and think about those moving forward.
I'd like to talk about the track because I love the track.
Oh, okay.
I think it's wonderful you do a thing like this. You get Hermann Tilke, who's the best in the business to do this, and you tell them to build a fast track inside a city. And they just deliver in 9 months. It's unbelievable. The only thing that didn't work was the things that happens that you're not really sure will happen. You build a lot of learning by trying. But the corner 13, corner 22, 23, and 27, to some degree, you could take it in two different ways, totally made my day. I love this track.
Okay. I'll
not
push
particularly
back
to the location, but okay, the track.
I'll push back a little bit, Matt, and which is just that, like I said, I think on the race review, I think a lot of that was predictable. And I think a lot of people looked at the layout and the close walls and went, oh, that is going to lead to a lot of carnage. And you could see if you put those walls around Spa, you probably get exactly the same kind of result. It's just something inherent about street circuits. I don't buy that it's unpredictable.
It's not unpredictable, but it's predictable at all street circuits. And I do want to point out, just because it occurred to me, that we had 4 virtual, or as I now call them, Vettel safety cars, because Vettel was, parts of his car were responsible, I think, for every last one of them, because he got into a bash with Tsunoda and then another one with Raikkonen and was just dropping bits of his car everywhere. But if you took those away, you had that ridiculous pace at the front where Hamilton was pushing pushing Verstappen and trying to make him burn through his tires. And you had this great, you really had a lot of great racing going on this circuit. It's just the need to clean the debris off the track really, really ate into the actual strategy part of it in a lot of ways.
And that element, that is actually a very typical Hamilton tactic, and it's the sort of thing that can be hidden from view, and it's not as spectacular as a dive down the outside. But Hamilton has very often, in stints of of races really pushed and harassed and hounded, not necessarily to get the overtake done, but he's done it to Bottas loads. When there was a genuine, oh, will Bottas be an equal driver? He used to just absolutely rinse Bottas in the first stint and just make him burn through his tyres. So I'm glad you pointed that out, Matt.
Yeah, and the thing that I want to point out about Ocon, and we started with Ocon and Bottas. Let's go backwards to after the start. He actually, Ricardo made progress forward, and Ricardo was chasing Ocon and could not catch him at all. Ocon was able to stay ahead. Partly Ricardo was defending from behind, but the Alpine had genuine pace over Ricardo in the McLaren. I think part of that might too have been the medium tires eventually going off, yeah. but even on the medium tires early days, he couldn't get there.
Yeah. So, well, let's give props to Alpine then, because we're painting this picture of they've only done well during chaos. But look, they've maximized the opportunities when they have been there. And Ocon ended up the grid. He ended up actually out front. He ended up in pole. He was fighting with Ricardo and McLaren, that's been better than them all season, and then had a darn good battle against Bottas. So you can't do that unless they got something right that weekend. So Alpine clearly did something right.
Yeah, and then he ended up having a nice long chat with Toto Wolff.
Yeah, here's your conspiracy theory. Oh, look,
there you go.
Last corner. And then Toto's like, well done. I will send you your Mercedes in the post.
Two years, we'll see you in, yes, okay. That's the fun speculation.
So what I would like to do now is just have a little bit of a look forward, just 5 or 10 minutes, a little bit of look forward to Abu Dhabi next weekend, because I am going to get kicked out of my shed. We are recording on a Tuesday afternoon here. Matt, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning when we started the call. Now, you're more of a morning person than me, Matt, but for me, so we should do it as an experiment. Let's wake me up at 7 to do a podcast, and you'll get a very different...
it's like... 2 a.m. for me, man.
You get a very different experience. No, yeah, exactly. At least it'll keep me out away from the school runs and and away from all the chaos. Pull your shoes! No! Both shoes! No, so my plan for next season, for 2022, is to have every other week, Tuesday, as a slot where we do our extra content, because we've been a bit piecemeal about it when we have a Joe on or a Matthew Carter-style show, or when we have the specialist shows with interviews whenever we can get hold of them. I want to kind of make every other Tuesday the time we do that, and then we can have, like, Missed Apex is 6 shows a month, and I think that would be good. And I also want to make sure that we've got 2 patron-only pieces of content in the month as well, where we can relax a little. And what I want to do is I want to move our doom scrolling podcast and that spirit into our F1 patron podcast. So we'll have an opportunity to, I think, argue a bit more, go a bit more into the Twitter style arguments of Formula One, and also talk about some doom scrolling stuff, personal stuff, and bring on some of our doom scrolling guests too.
That sounds like fun to me.
I'm not a Twitter user, but I hear it's very like peaceful on there.
Super people, peaceful. It's like a drum circle.
Nice to each other. It's okay.
Yeah, you should check it out. But what I wanted to do, Matt, as well, is to make sure that the people who have supported us and made this possible for us do get some extra content, and it's the kind of content we want to do anyway. So we'll deliver our 6 shows that will try and keep as professional as possible, and then we'll make 2 objectively worse but looser shows that we can have some more fun, some extra fun on during the month as well for our patrons. And if you do want to be a patron and support us, patreon.com/missedapex. It's right in the show notes below. At least check it out, and we'll try and make it worth your while to be a patron of Missed Apex podcast. But let's look forward to this finale. And yes, it does involve speaking about the top two a little bit, because that is where all eyes will be. As much as there is battles up and down the field, everyone is wondering what will go down between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. I'll lay my pennies down here that I think Mercedes will turn up with a car advantage. Very interesting to see a lot of pundits after qualifying in Saudi Arabia say, oh, no, Red Bull have got a car advantage. Oh, look, Red Bull are the fastest now because Verstappen was on a pole lap. I think this is entirely wrong. I think early on, Red Bull saw that they did not have race pace, and it was going to be much the same story as Interlagos and as Qatar. And so they set their car up to to be a pain in the behind. And that's what they did. They went out and they said, right, everything is about qualifying on pole and trying to make a nuisance of ourselves. So I think we're going to turn up to Abu Dhabi with the Mercedes being a much faster car, and Red Bull are going to have to do what they have been doing brilliantly since COTA, which is harass. And that's what it's going to be. It's going to be ground level, hand-to-hand combat. They're going to put Verstappen on pole. They're going to try and put him on pole, sacrifice everything to put him on pole. I could even see them, you know, just... I could even see them, like, making it difficult to be lapped. You know, having Perez being difficult to be lapped. They're going to throw everything at Mercedes, Matt. I cannot see this being just a clean fight.
Well, I think you are correct in that Red Bull, because of their rear wing issues, have lost out to Mercedes in terms of overall combination of qualifying and race pace. And I suspect, given the reprofile of the circuit, that will affect them equally, if not more, at the last race of the season. And looking at how they set up their energy deployment, it was all first sector. So it was all about getting as far away as possible during the first sector and then making the other people have to catch up and defending into turn one, because that's the only chance they had. I mean, even putting the medium tire on was frankly a little bit nuts, but they did it because they needed, the only way they were going to win is with track position to start. And that's a minor sign of desperation that they won't tell you about, but I absolutely believe to be true. I think Mercedes will go into the last race with a significant advantage, and it's really going to be Red Bull pulling one out of the hat to pull off a victory, which they now need to win the Drivers' Championship, unless, and I'm not going to say anymore because I don't want to be the person responsible.
So I want to be clear.
I'm going to say it. I want to say it.
Unless
you can just I'll wait my turn, but I'm gonna say it when you want me to say it.
Now I want you to say it now.
Okay. Jules, what will happen in Holland on Sunday evening when Max Verstappen is disqualified from the world championship from driving off Hamilton?
A proper storm. Am I allowed to say that?
No, but don't worry.
Oh, apparently now you are. It is a patron stream, but
A normal wedding in Denmark as well, just so you know. So no offense here.
It's understandable.
You'll frighten the Brits, okay, Jules? Keep a lid on it.
We talked about before the kind of football fan attitude that some Verstappen fans bring to the game. The sentiment I get on Twitter is FIA, but then mafia memes, you know, it's all everyone's against Red Bull. Everyone is in favor of Verstappen. Hardly any reflection on the Red Bull and Verstappen behavior and whether the penalties would have actually been in rightfully given to him.
Yeah.
So if he gets disqualified, I'm sure it will be a big scandal.
Okay.
Regardless of why.
The scenario Christian has laid out there was, I wasn't sure. I mean, I did do a tweet. We thought, I think, most of the panel, that the brake check could have attracted a higher penalty. It attracted exactly the penalty that would make sure that they went into the final round level. And I see that narrative. It's very useful to F1 because now they get to do the level on points into the final round. After all of this, it comes down to level. Great. That's fine. You know, we can take our tinfoil hats on and off as required. But they're not actually level because the Spa win, I think, the Spa win in the rain, that counts as a win. So if they do count back on level points, I think Verstappen will have seven wins to six wins.
I can't remember the numbers, but he definitely has more wins than Hamilton. So on point, he will win.
Yeah. So unless they finish 9th and 10th, whoever finishes ahead out of those two is going to be the championship leader. But that also means that Verstappen, if he ends up in a double DNF with Lewis Hamilton and they both go out, he is champion. And
so did you see the clip with Verstappen watching Senna taking out Prost in Suzuka?
No.
Where he actually said, yeah, of course, I would do that too.
Right. And this is the thing.
Yeah. On that note.
I don't think it's controversial and I don't think it's anti-Verstappen to say that Verstappen has it in him to at least drive so close to the line that if, you know, okay, well, if I get ahead of you, I get ahead of you. That's great. I'm trying to overtake you. I'm trying to block you. That's my aim. But I can push so close to the limit that I don't mind if we both end up out. I don't think that's controversial that he would court potential contact. I think we've seen him do it. In Brazil, he took a trajectory where he was absolutely putting a collision or not a collision in the hands of Lewis Hamilton. If you dare try and stay on the track, you hit me. And he did that in Qatar as well. So I really don't think it's a stretch or anti-Verstappen, Jules, to say that a double DNF is possible.
No, not at all. But that also originates in the way he himself reflects on the things that have happened during the season, and especially the last couple of races. You never hear him reflect on his own actions in a way like, okay, maybe I went a bit too far. Maybe I shouldn't have done it. Maybe I should look back at the images to see if I misjudged anything. There's no doubt within Red Bull, within himself, that they are in the right. And in that way, the only way I think it can be prevented, the scenarios you just put out, is if the stewards, Masi, whoever, sit down with him and maybe him and Hamilton before the race, before the weekend, and say, listen, from now on, this is what goes and this is what doesn't go.
I'm sorry, but there's no penalty. Let's say it is Verstappen's fault and he is deemed to have deliberately taken out Hamilton or to be predominantly to blame. There's no penalty they can give him that stops him being world champion.
They did it with Schumacher.
Schumacher had already lost on track.
But he would have won if they didn't disqualify him.
No.
With the Villeneuve thing.
Yeah, so Villeneuve won on track and finished first.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Intervention. And then about 5 days later, there was a hearing and he was disqualified and had all his points taken away. I do not see any universe where the FIA in that similar position take the title away from Max Verstappen in the steward's office by disqualifying him from the whole championship. They can disqualify him from the race. Won't matter. He'll still have more points on countback than Lewis Hamilton.
Let's just hope this will not be something we have to talk about, because we want pure racing. We want the right man to win. And the one... Why are you shaking your head, Spence?
Because we won't get clean racing. We won't get good racing. We haven't had it all season and we won't get it here.
True.
There's one way without FIA or whoever interfering, and that is if Merck just makes sure Verstappen doesn't get anywhere near Hamilton. And that means a front row lockout, probably. And then maybe give something extra to Merck customers, maybe McLaren, who have some extra power somehow, and maybe intervene in the qualifying. But what they need to do is just make sure Verstappen doesn't get anywhere near him. And that's the safest way, I think.
Matt?
I wish to disagree slightly with your assertion there's been no good racing. There's been a tremendous amount of good racing. But as we've run out of races, it's gotten a lot worse.
Well, where was the good racing between Verstappen and Hamilton? There hasn't been good racing. It's just been a series of, like, launches.
The sprint race in Silverstone to start with.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing in Barcelona was tremendous. I mean, we have seen a fair amount of good racing between them. And even, frankly, his move, as Brad said on the show, up the inside on the second restart was a lovely, audacious, entirely legal and amazing move that really put Hamilton in a bad spot because he left the door slightly open. We have seen good racing. It is possible it could happen. But I think the problem is, like you say, the reward for Verstappen for doing whatever he wants is still a world championship. And having seen what he did in the last race, it's concerning. It's concerning that he might decide to take that as his guideline.
Yeah, certainly the risk and reward is different, Jules. So like that, Hamilton can't afford the double DNF, and he can. You could argue, well, he earned that position by having more wins on countback, but...
Yeah, I was just going to say what Mark Greenough in the chat now points out, because what the examples Matt just gave, those were from a phase in the season when Max wasn't as aggressive as he is now. He's always been aggressive, but not like now. And he doesn't need it. He can race cleaner. He's talented enough. He's brutally talented. He's fast enough. And of course, if he has a car deficit, it just doesn't happen for him. But he doesn't need this violent kind of driving, which would take away every glance of a title he would win that way.
Well, we're out of time. I'm going to get kicked out of the shed in any minute right now, and Matt has to go and move a car because it's New York and you have to play musical cars. But look forward to the race in Abu Dhabi. Look forward to a season finale. I think we are equally going to be as excited and happy and or bummed out as we are going to be relieved that some of the tension and stress out of this F1 season is coming to an end and a natural conclusion. So try and enjoy it, even if your driver doesn't win. Try not to get onto social media and start calling everyone turnips. And do tune in to Missed Apex podcast, and we will be bringing you a race review on Sunday as quickly as we can. To follow all the panel and to be a patron and to subscribe to Race Weekend magazine, of which we get 15%, look at all the beautifully prepared show notes below. So in YouTube, it's below. Apple, you swipe up. And Pocket Cast, you go left and right. But go and find them. We have all the information for you there. I assume that everyone is as lazy as me, so I make everything as simple as possible. So go and click around and see if anything interests you. That's about us. Yep, I can hear a tiptoe up the garden path now for me to get kicked out of the shed. So we will see you Sunday. Until then, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. No! Leave me alone! It's my shed! I built it! I built it with my own hands! No, please let me play shed a bit more.
Who's taking over your shed?
My wife. Since the pandemic. Since the pandemic, this is also her studio. It's really annoying.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.